dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, KRFP Moscow, Idaho, 91.3 Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, California, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or KFAR Knoxville. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. A few days after the election, a friend of mine emailed me a graphic made to look like the cover of Time magazine with a picture of W and the headline, We're, and then that word that begins with F and rhymes with duct that I'm not allowed to say over the radio. Yes, we're in a fix, caught between a hammer of ecological and economic meltdown and a well-organized group of Christian fascists and their neocon allies determined to impose biblical rule in America while making war on the world for its remaining resources. My family has a direct experience with fascism in Europe, and I want you to get it, that fascists can't be reasoned with nor compromised with. You could flee or fight. John Kerry's exhortation to his supporters to come together with Bush supporters as Americans was, in my view, out of touch with reality. The Canadian Immigration Service reports a six-fold increase in inquiries from Americans considering leaving the country. And who can blame them? I exist because my mother was able to flee her Nazi-occupied nation. But ironically, it was the United States that saved Europe from fascism then. Who will save the United States? I'm afraid it's those of us willing to stand and fight to become the new American resistance. The Christian dominionists and corporate fascists are by no means a majority, in spite of the lies your TV tells you. But majorities seldom rule. Well-organized, well-armed minorities willing to exercise violence and repression have ruled societies throughout history. The Nazi Party was not a majority either, but they had the levers of power, the tools of repression, the determination to dominate, the ability to divide and conquer. They counted on the fact that many would just keep their heads down and go along to get along because they were not part of the targeted groups. Sadly, so many of their victims went without a fight. At that time, no one could have imagined anything so monstrous. And of course, nobody wanted to imagine such a monstrous scheme, least of all its victims. But this now is a matter of history. They could not have taken millions of well-organized people determined to resist. They took them, a few at a time. Sadly, with many of them reporting to the death trains with their suitcases and bird cages. Now, generally, when Bush's lips are moving, he's lying. But he did speak true when he said, "If you're not with us, you're against us." The question is, what us is he talking about? First on the program tonight, American historian and man of letters Gore Vidal. And then we turn to the other juggernaut on our horizon, the collapse of industrial civilization as a result of energy depletion and the choices we face, as explained by ecologist Richard Heimberg, author of the recent book Power Down, Options and Actions for a Post-Carbon World.
As part of a series on the American Empire and the events leading up to the presidential election of 2004, the preeminent author and intellectual Gore Vidal offers some thoughts on that election and America's discovery of God.
Thank you. Good morning. Good evening. Whatever it is, wherever you are, let us hope it is good. This is Gore Vidal speaking from the Hollywood Hills. Recovering, as the country is, from our latest experiment in democracy. We're still stuck at 101, but better there than not at all. I think the first question that goes through the minds of those of us who are not faith-based, did they steal it this time too? Since our media does not report much of anything of general interest to the voting public, and many things that are of no interest at all are perhaps untrue, not much investigation has been done of the voting patterns in the late election. I've been applying to many sources, journalistic, foreign, national, even to the Gore Vidal Yahoo group, which can be found on the internet at groups.yahoo.com. By the way, I have nothing to do with this except I'm an interested observer and I learn quite a lot from watching, reading what these people come up with. They're very intelligent and rather thorough when it comes to investigation. And I suspect there'll be more and more information as time passes of a sort which will not be given us by the New York Times. There are now opinions out that there was something disagreeable in the state of Ohio, in, I think it was New Mexico. And until some investigative journalism is done and people get out there and try to find out what did happen, we will not really know about the legitimacy of our system. And after the election of 4 years ago, living for 4 years with an illegitimate president, given to illegitimate deeds, like preemptively attacking countries innocent of any danger to us, any harm to us, illegitimate presidents are to be watched out for. So whether he has won this time or he is not, is a matter of general interest. So the examinations are going on, and I believe if you watch this particular internet site, interesting news is coming across it. I'm watching it. Meanwhile, let us ponder the message that the media wants us to take away. America, after many years of decadence, of free sex, drugs, slipshod performance in just about everything, from the stock market to the battleground, has now returned to its ancestral roots, which a few publicists working for the Republican Party seem to think are Christian and or Jewish and or, if nothing else, based on faith in God, whoever, wherever he might be. The United States was founded by people who most definitely were not Christian or Jewish or Islamic. They were men of the Enlightenment, and they were dedicated to reason, to the idea that human beings with goodwill, faith in the honesty of each other, could create a nation that would last. And they chose not a democracy, they chose a republic as their model, where you would have elections, representative government, And for a long time, in a messy way, our system worked. We've always had problems with groups that wanted to seize control, that wanted to keep us from drinking alcohol, taking drugs, have sex, do this, that. We've had many pressure groups, but we have never had, until now, a pressure group take over the executive branch of the government, the two branches of Congress, and the judiciary. That is a clean sweep for what are called neoconservatives or conservatives, reactionaries. And the message that came out loud and clear from our media, which I don't believe for one minute, the people were saying, yes, well, you know, I voted for values, moral values. The day that any American votes for moral values will be a day that the second coming is about to arrive. We are not a faith-based people. We're a practical people who come out of the Enlightenment of the 18th century. We come out of Voltaire. We come out of Jefferson. We come out of some of the wisest men that ever lived on earth who were trying to counter superstition of every sort, whether it be in the churches or in the folklore of a nation. We were the show-me generation, and we were also the ones who questioned everything. The campaign that was waged by the selected president, who is now officially, at last, the elected president, the selected president, advisors, who are brilliant public relations men, and they decided to emphasize God, a figure noticeably absent from the founding fathers, noticeably absent from most of our elections since then for the last 250 years. We are not a godly people. We are a practical people. We are empiric. We believe in life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. We believe in equal justice for all, due process of law. These are the mantras by which our republic has lived and prospered for so very long. Now we are told there has been an eruption of faith across the nation. Evangelical Protestant Christians are riding high. The official religions, Catholic, Jewish, Islamic, what else? There are many others. They are all pretty much on board in the views of the people in the media. How did this happen? Well, the most wonderful four words in the English language are, "I told you so." I got the election all wrong, as did a lot of people who thought that this election might bear some relation to reality. So we'd be talking about deficits, we'd be talking about unemployment, we'd be talking about real things. Instead, they changed the subject to gay marriage, they changed it to abortion as usual. They changed it to hot issues, sex issues, where we were going to be a godly nation and we were going to reform ourselves. And they turned the whole country into a kind of AA meeting. Faith, 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 and your wickedness will be healed and you will be made whole. 2 days after the election, the Los Angeles Times printed a story. Some backers of Bush say they anticipate a revolution. That's the headline. Well, I anticipated this revolution a quarter of a century ago with some of the same players. I wrote in a piece in 1979, published in Playboy, a very highbrow and highly moral place dedicated to Christian values. In the late 60s and early 70s, the enemies of the Equal Rights Amendment set out to smear the movement as lesbian. All sorts of militant right-wing groups have since got into the act. The Ku Klux Klan, the John Birch Society, the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress, the Conservative Caucus, and dozens of other like-minded groups. Their aim is to deny equal rights to women through scare tactics. If the amendment is accepted, they warn us that lesbians will be able to marry each other. Rape will be common. Men, the horror of this, men will use women's toilets. This nonsense proved to be remarkably effective at that time. But then, as the Conservative Caucus's Howard Phillips told the New Republic with engaging candor, this was about the time of the 1978 election, "We're going after people on the basis of their hot buttons. In this past year, the two hot buttons have proved to be sexual, ERA and gay rights legislation, or save the family, save our children." Elsewhere, in the bad lands of the nation, one Richard Viguerie is now the chief money raiser for the powers of darkness. In 1977, Viguerie told the Congressional Quarterly, "I'm willing to compromise to come to power." It's a bit chilling, isn't it? There aren't 50% of the people that share my view, and I'm willing to make concessions to come to power. This has a very familiar Nuremberg ring. Viguerie is said to have at least 10 million names and addresses on file. He sends out mailings and raises large sums for all sorts of far-right political candidates and organizations. Viguerie is not just a hustler. He is also an ideologue. "I have raised millions of dollars for the conservative movement over the years, and I am not happy with the results. I decided to become more concerned with how the money is spent." He is now beginning to discuss the creation of a new political party, perhaps the W Republican Party, now aborning. Viguerie has vowed that the organized conservative community is going to put in many times more in the way of cash than ever before, because "I want a massive assault on Congress in 1978. I don't want any token efforts. We now have the talent and resources to move in a bold, massive way. I think we can move against Congress in 1978 in a way that's never been conceived of." Move against Congress. That sounds like revolution. Now back to today. Some backers of Bush say they anticipate a revolution. Exulting in their electoral victories, President Bush's conservative supporters immediately turn to staking out candidates for an ambitious agenda of long-cherished goals, including privatizing Social Security, banning same-sex marriage, remaking the Supreme Court, and overturning the court's decisions in support of abortion rights. Now comes the revolution, says Richard Viguerie. You've just heard his voice as of 1978, and here's his voice again a quarter of a century later in the year 2004, and he is victorious. The LA Times goes on to describe him as the dean of conservative direct mail, putting it mildly. As he told about a dozen fellow movement stalwarts gathered around a television here in Arlington, tallying up their Senate seats in the earliest hours of the morning, if you don't implement a conservative agenda now, when do you? Asked Mr. Viguerie. By midday, however, fights over the spoils had already begun as conservatives debated the electorate's verdict on the war in Iraq, the Bush administration's spending, and the administration's heavy embrace of traditional social causes. This is a strange victory cry, which I never thought I'd hear, since he had, I thought, really done himself in 20-odd years ago in that election, and for all of his huffing and puffing about the conservative majority out there, which he confesses only 50% of the people think as he does, or he confessed then, and I don't think 50% of the people think as he does now, but I don't think that they are informed about the issues. Number one, we're told on the Bush agenda is privatizing Social Security. I don't think that's very popular. But theoretically, anything can be sold if misinterpreted. So the great victory, it's been a long time coming. These people don't give up. They know what they want. They couldn't achieve it in any normal electoral way. They don't have the votes. Most people would like Social Security to be as strong as possible. They don't want it privatized and handed over to mutual funds or the stock market, that bastion of steadiness. And yet, if you can control the media, which this group now in charge of the country does do, and they're perfectly shameless, whether it is using Fox News or even poor Wolf Blitzer, who is very much party line most of the time, serving far-off masters. And then, of course, the press, which takes any handout from Washington as a piece of great news. So we're in a curious bind. We've been turned into a Christian nation when we're not one. We're a diverse nation, not based upon any religion at all. Some people are religious, some are not. That's their business. The state is not religious. And this must be emphasized heavily, because any attempt to make it so is to overthrow the original republic, which is the aim of these people who say they want revolution. This is about as much revolution, the recent election, as I think Americans can bear. To go any further in the direction of banning Roe versus Wade or whatever it is that they happen to be shooting for is going to cause great resistance. And we must guard carefully, as Thomas Jefferson warned us, the Tree of Liberty. And this always offends the right wing, because they don't like Thomas Jefferson. They don't really like the American Republic, and they don't like the Founding Fathers. They're willing to worship them as long as they don't have to listen to them or be guided by them. But Jefferson warned us early on, and if you remember, he wanted to have a constitutional convention every 30 years or so, because he said, the earth belongs to the living. We are not to be held by our forefathers. no matter how wise they were, we must design each society for ourselves. Well, I'll say they're good Jeffersonians, the faith-based religious right. They're going to base everything on the good book, which they regard as ultimately good. And those of us who are more skeptical, including the founders of our country, don't find this to be the case. We find that we're being invited into a prison, which, by the way, is one of the growing activities in the United States, the building of prisons. And as we've seen in Iraq, we are certainly masters of running prisons and would like to have many more of them all over the earth. And we shall have, if the current Bush-Cheney junta continues to have its way around the world. Dangerous times, but then what time was not? Anyway, it is interesting to somebody who's interested in narrative plots. One thing always interesting when you're composing a narrative is you introduce a theme and then you later develop on it. You don't just let it go out. And Mr. Vigari is a good dramatist. I mean, 1978, he's warning us what he has in mind for us. In 04, he says, "This is the revolution." So, remember that the tree of liberty must be occasionally watered with the blood of tyrants and of patriots. But let us hope it does not go that far. Meanwhile, we're up against a great confusion about who we are in the world. And the tragedy of this election was that at no point were any real issues allowed to be discussed. Kerry was easily the worst candidate that the Democratic Party has fielded in my lifetime. Dukakis was wiser and often more to the point. Anyone who goes on booming in that awful Massachusetts politician, boom, 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 way, "And if I'm president, I will do this and I will do that," and your brain shuts down. And yet millions of us wanted him to win. I used to make excuses for him. Well, you know, he doesn't have to be a good speaker. Then he said, "Of course I would have supported the war, even if I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction." With that, he destroyed himself, which was perhaps wise, leaving us with Mr. Vigari's president, George W. Bush, who has no plan but many designs on the Treasury and on our civil liberties. And who knows what further military preemptive adventures around the world. So here we are. Bush likes to use the word crusade. You know, he doesn't know what it means. It comes from the Latin crux, which means cross. And a crusade is an adventure for the cross, as were the original crusades of the Christian West of Europe into the Islamic world of the Middle East and further east. So there he is using the most dangerous word, which is sure to ignite the Muslim world and give away our game. And then with Tony Blair, who seems to have found Jesus somewhere or other, not in Parliament, but he found it agreeing with him. So we have two leaders of two traditional allies, England and the United States, with two leaders who want to serve our Lord Jesus. And this is really scary. It is too late in the game for Bronze Age religions. Far too late. And religions based on vengeance, religions based on eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth? Why are we in the Middle East? Revenge for 9/11. Well, I quite understand the emotion of revenge. I too suffer from that emotion when I regard Osama bin Laden. But we attacked the wrong country. I'm told that on Yahoo, somebody has written in that he thinks that Osama bin Laden has been reading me because he said, they translated apparently something the New York Times didn't, as far as I could tell. His entire message to us after the election, which was quite interesting, that if we minded our own business, we might not suffer sudden attacks and so on. And the person who wrote the letter said he's obviously been reading Gore Vidal because he quotes him when he says there's no action without reaction, a line I've been using ever since I flunked physics in school. It's the only thing I learned from physics. There is no action in nature without reaction. You cannot knock people's mosques or temples down or twin towers down without expecting a reaction. And then he also referred to, why not hit Sweden? Well, we don't need to hit Sweden. That's one of my lines. And I'd said it long before I went to Sweden this last summer. Well, I'm happy if Osama bin Laden is reading me, but he might become a little more amiable in his ways. And really, go to the United Nations and say, I would like to talk this over with the West, particularly with the United States. That would quiet Mr. Bush, because he'd have to think of all kinds of horrible things, invent them, that Osama bin Laden has been doing in order not to face the real quarrels that he has with us, and quarrels, of course, that we have with him. It is time to make peace. And that is what these great elections are supposed to mean in the United States. We have come at a turning point. This is equinoctial. We have been following such a course, let us say, of indiscriminate wars against just about everybody. Well, why not change? Why not try peace for a little while? Why not do something constructive instead of knocking down other countries' cities in order to give Halliburton and Bechtel work to rebuild what we knocked down? In other words, we have policies of a maniac. No one can make sense of them, and luckily we've got an administration which is not competent to make sense of anything. Or if it is, they certainly hide the competent people. And sense has not come our way.
You are listening to Gore Vidal with some thoughts on the recent election and America's discovery of God. We now return to Gore Vidal.
I've been asked, how grave a crisis is this for the United States? Surely somebody said it can't be worse than the Civil War. Well, the Civil War came in stages. This is a stage in something whose end is not yet in view. Remember that these people who now govern us already have a working concentration camp at Guantanamo in Cuba. A concentration camp. It took the Civil War a long time to get around to Andersonville. We start before any kind of Civil War, or we have an exterior war, except it is not a war. It is American attacks on other countries. We are the attacking nation. And we've attacked two countries and smashed them up, Afghanistan and Iraq. We now have our eye on Iran, Syria. Who knows what else is going on? Nor will we be informed in advance, nor will there be a Congress in place to question what the executive, which is now determined that anything that they think might one day be dangerous to us, must be struck now with full force. This administration thinks everyone is like itself. If you have atomic weapons, you'll use them first, of course. That makes people fear you, and you can get their oil, and you can intimidate them. Luckily, most countries' leaders do not act the way the Cheney Bush junta does. So the world is not entirely a Hobbesian jungle. But these people, before they finish, are going to turn it into one. And this is the most dangerous thing that has faced us, far more dangerous than the Civil War. The Civil War got out of hand. There were many points in which a peace could have been made. The South could have come around. The end of slavery was not the reason why it was fought. It was fought to preserve the Union. Lincoln freed some slaves because out of military necessity. A very virtuous thing to do, and had the war been based on that, the war would have been one of the most moral ones in history. But it wasn't based on it. That was an inadvertent end result for which we're all duly thankful. The difference now is that somebody who heard my comments on Vigory said, well, you act as though he had nothing that he wants except old-time Christian moral values for everybody. No divorce, no abortion, no this, no that. That was a good question because, of course, he has a political agenda. He's on the side of corporate America. They want oil. We are due to run out of, the world is due to run out of oil, according to one report that I'm told that Cheney ordered up from geologists and so on. In 2001, that we are going to run out of oil for everybody around 2020. That seems pretty close to me. Naturally, Mr. Vigory, who must be a very old man now, but sturdy as an ox, Mr. Vigory would like the world's oil for his people so that they can pray to Jesus and become sunbeams. He wants also a homogeneous America, preferably Christian, since Christians are instructed by St. Paul to proselytize, to convert, even if you have to kill the person you're converting. The fact that so many Jewish groups have joined with the evangelical right wing in America to me is a sign of just group insanity. These people are not only tend to be anti-Semites, but they are also for the conversion of the Jews at the time of Armageddon and the time of rapture, when the good Christian folk are lifted up out of the end of the world and the rest go to hell or go to heaven. These are the natural enemies, these fundamentalist Christians, of the old republic. Jefferson had his problems with them. He ended up being forced to call himself a deist, which means one who believes there is a God, which was a bit better than being called an atheist or an agnostic, which is more correct, somebody who doesn't know. None of us knows. If anybody tells you he knows, just tell him, well, see you there in time. So this is a big crisis. And the resonance has been added. It's as if a really great playwright had got hold of this story, the American story as of 2004. A really great playwright had got hold of it and said, you know, this thing is too thin. Nobody ever fought a war over too many taxes. They've had rebellions, but I mean war, revolution. It has to be something bigger for a global empire, for 13 colonies. Yes, you can have a fight with England over being taxed. We're global. We are the world. We are the universe. We are in outer space. We have weapons there, trained on this earth. We can abolish whole cities, whole countries. The human race, if somebody thinks about it, that can be done too. Think big. Well, Mr. Vigory is thinking big, but starting small. He said, well, the way to get control of the presidency, let us say, is you must control the Electoral College. How do you do that? You get 8 states with very small populations, so you won't have much popular vote. But they have electoral voters, 2 for the senators, 1 for each member of the House of Representatives, and so on. You can put together a winning majority just using these states. And you can outweigh New York, California, the great states of the Union, by getting them together, always playing to their prejudices, to their dislikes, which are minorities, whether sexual or racial or religious. That's why there is so much of that going on now. And so much of that is being quietly shoved at the Supreme Court, so the Supreme Court will play the game too. And by starting to say, well, we don't want same-sex marriages, let's have a constitutional convention over that. While we're at it, we better go back the good old days and ban homosexuality. And perhaps, there are quite a few things that our Lord Jesus would want. How do you know Lord Jesus? Because I speak to him, said our leader. Apparently, Jesus talks to George W. Bush. I thought he always put him on hold, but that shows the kind of misinformation you get when you're outside the Beltway. Some years ago, I did a study of the 4 generations of the family of John Adams, the 2nd president. And the star of the family, for me, was always his son, John Quincy Adams. Not a very good president, but a great statesman. Absolutely an ideal American. In every sense, intellectually, morally, politically. And I note that I wrote this of him at the time when he's debating what to do politically. For some time, John Quincy had been a Republican. As early as 1802, he wrote his brother Tom, I concur with you in the opinion that the cause of federalism is irretrievable. Much of the Republican Party today of George W. Bush is a form of federalism, particularly the judges they pick. The old Federalist Party had indeed fallen apart. Everyone was now a Republican of one sort or another. The Western leader of the party was Henry Clay, closely pressed by Andrew Jackson. John Quincy himself was not a man of locality. He was, dare I say it, from Massachusetts. Yet when he heard an American jingo say, as a toast, our country right or wrong, John Quincy responded severely, I disclaim all patriotism incompatible with the principles of eternal justice. How unknown that would be in Washington today, I now add. As far as we know, it never occurred to any Adams of the four great generations of the Adams family that there might be no such thing as eternal justice. The first Adams believed in the Puritan God. The second was equally devout until the very end. In the last generation, overt religion vanished almost entirely from their voluminous letters and diaries. Nevertheless, the idea of eternal justice, of moral right, of some essential and binding law to the universe, never ceased to order their lives. That's better than being faith-based, because it is constitution-based. It is based on the original republic and upon Mr. Jefferson and his charter for us. Let's say my friends at Yahoo really discover some voting fraud in Ohio in the late election. We know perfectly well that the New York Times won't do much about it, nor certainly television won't. That's the time that I am talking to you out there listening, I trust, on some equipment which fits into a very small bag. And this is radio equipment, which can be, I could be broadcasting to China too from this thing. The means of getting communication out, and that's what this is all about, because the horror of the late election was that the people plainly did not know enough about what was going on to know how to vote. They still thought Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were bosom buddies and worked together, because Bush, etc., had gone on and on and on. They repeated it 30 times a day, so finally the message gets through. I don't think we in the opposition have the luxury of repeating it 30 times a day, but if you get this message out through tapes, through discs, through whatever, and they can be made very cheaply, and you can get a lot of famous people to read them and act in them, which will entice a public that might not find itself so interested in public affairs, you have a chance of revolutionizing a country. Khomeini, when he came back to, before he came back to Iran, was exiled in Paris, and in Paris he would send back his sermons to be distributed on tape, audio tapes, to the Iranian people. There suddenly was a great burst of cheering for Khomeini, come back, come back. They threw the Shah out, and Khomeini came back to rule his people in his country. Well, thank heavens we don't have a Khomeini, but we have a lot of virtue out there, and we have a lot of interesting information out there, which the people don't get, and which advertisers, I mean, if we had a bunch of advertisers here listening to me talk about how to inform the people, oh, we tried that. They don't like it. They're bored. They want to see Disney stuff. They want to see loud television, people talking about their sex lives and so on. They want noise. They only want it because they're not given anything else. You can reverse that in 2 minutes. So here is a chance, I think, for the people at large to form together across the country. I've always, in the back of my mind, had a theory that one way to cure the corruption of our political system is to have shadow governments all around the country. When you have the usual hacks going to Congress, well then, let the people get together and have a few free meetings and nominate their own shadow senator, shadow congressman, shadow election commissioner, because sometimes that is the most important figure in the stealing of an election. There are many ways of doing this. And we must think of them all. Well, now that I have given you the dark picture, Mr. Richard Viguerie's what I suspect will be a brief victory over the American people, what I was really doing in describing how he took over a quarter of a century to pull this thing off, that takes a lot of patience and a lot of cunning. Now let us do the same. Let us follow his template. Let us go state by state, community by community. Toward the end of his life, Thomas Jefferson, who never thought much of the Constitution, he was in favor of the Bill of Rights, but he didn't like the way the system worked, and he thought it was going to have to take a lot of changes. Well, let us move in a Jeffersonian direction. Jefferson's ideal, which I don't think is probably possible now, but Jefferson's ideal was every congressional district in the United States should be like a small republic with its own government and make its own laws. Yes, they'd be subservient in some ways to Washington, to the Capitol, but they would have great independence, they would have democracy. Because he knew perfectly well our system, once we became an empire, which thanks to Jefferson we did with the Louisiana Purchase, once we became that big, we were no longer going to have a hands-on government. We were going to be governed by representatives. Representatives will be bought by great corporations. Big money will rule, and we, the people, will be screwed. Why don't we, the people? Now, you've heard me going on and quoting Mr. Viguerie at the beginning of this coup d'etat, because it's not a revolution. Revolutions don't begin this far at the top. But it is a coup against the people. We should go around thinking of perhaps subdivisions within the United States, going after smaller posts, worrying about the county clerk, worrying about the candidates for sheriff, local candidates. Don't worry about the senator. He's already bought. Maybe there's some members of the House of Representatives who are virtuous. If they are, certainly encourage them, keep them. But I see the powers of light and those who care for the Republic working in another direction with the people at large, in which you explain to them what's happening. Now, with technology, the internet has done wonders about revolutionizing so many of the ways we look at things, the way information gets passed on. Well, let's take it a bit further, and let us prepare using internet techniques of instructing people. If you want to tell the people about what's being done to them with oil and natural gas and who is profiting and why, you could make your own disc for very little money, mass produce them, send them out free to the people. If you want to know about what's wrong with taxes, how the rich are getting away with these tax cuts of Bush, explain it. And you can do it very simply. You know, one of the tricks of bad government is to make everything so complicated that people just give up. Well, simplify it. That is not the greatest task on earth. Most people can understand the Declaration of Independence, which launched not only a great republic, but a great empire. Now, beginning to go somewhat to seed, but all the more reason to plant new seeds by going back to the ideas of Jefferson and the techniques of the dread Mr. Viguerie, as they were clever in getting what he wanted, which is a very bad kind of society, religious-based, bigoted. Well, go the other direction. People did like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Let that be our goal.
You've been listening to Gore Vidal in the Hollywood Hills with some thoughts on the recent election and America's discovery of God for Pacifica Station WBAI in New York. This program is directed and engineered in Los Angeles by David Adelson for the LA Sound Posse and engineered and edited by Christopher Zaguris in New York. The Mingus Big Band opened and closes this show with Ecclesiastics, a composition by Charles Mingus from Mingus Big Band 93, Nostalgia in Times Square. You also heard Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer play Invention No. 10 from the CD Music for Two. Gore Vidal's most recent book is Imperial America, Reflections on the United States of Amnesia, published by Nation Books. Another recent book is Inventing a Nation, Washington Adams Jefferson, published by Yale University Press. For questions, comments, and more information on this and previous Gore Vidal programs on American Politics 2004, you can email us at gorevidal@wbai.org. That's GOREVIDAL. For the WBAI Arts Department, I'm the producer of this program, Janet Coleman.
And this is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, KRFP Moscow, 91.3 Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or KFAR Knoxville. Last Friday, I spoke with ecologist Richard Heinberg about his new book, Power Down, Options and Actions for a Post-Carbon World. Heinberg is a member of the core faculty of New College of California in San Francisco. His past two books have dealt with alerting the public of the coming scarcity of cheap fossil fuels upon which industrialized civilization depends. In his previous book, The Party's Over, he explained the significance of peak oil, the peak in global oil extraction, and what it means to our energy-intensive lifestyle. In his latest book, Power Down, he addresses the options we face and the actions we can take to avert catastrophic social collapse in the wake of declining petroleum supplies. In the introduction to his book, he wrote, "This is how I feel sometimes. Imagine yourself in the following circumstance. You have just awakened from sleep to find that you are on a tar paper raft floating away from shore. With you on the raft are a couple of hundred people, most of whom seem completely oblivious to their situation. They are drinking beer, barbecuing ribs, fishing, or sleeping. You look at the rickety vessel and say to yourself, 'My God, this thing is going to sink any moment.' Miraculously, seconds go by and it's still afloat. You look around to see who's in charge. The only people you can find who appear to have any authority are some pompous-looking characters operating a gambling casino in the middle of the raft. In back of them stand heavily armed soldiers. You point out that the raft appears dangerous. They inform you that it is the safest and most wonderful vessel ever constructed, and that if you persist in suggesting otherwise, the guards will exercise their brand of persuasion on you. You back away, smiling, and move to the edge of the raft. At this point you're convinced, and even comment to a stranger next to you, that with those idiots at the helm, the raft can't last more than another minute or so.